Good morning, Your Honor. Donald Kilmer, appearing for the appellants, the Nordykes. May it please the Court, seated at counsel table with me is Don Cates, co-counsel, amicus counsel for Second Amendment Foundation, Mr. Gura, amicus for National Rifle Association, Mr. Michelle. My client, Sally Nordyke, is in the room, Your Honor. There was a point I made in the initial oral arguments in this case that had to do with the fact that California contains no right to keep and bear arms in its own state constitution. That point was emphasized in the Kastler case before the California Supreme Court. It was a point recently reiterated by the California Attorney General, Jerry Brown, in an amicus brief submitted on this issue in corporation in the Chicago cases that are currently pending.
Counsel, what is the position of the Attorney General in California in connection with this matter?
I believe, Your Honor, he stated in his amicus brief, I put it in a 28J letter, he believes that incorporation should be supported. He urged a reversal of the Seventh Circuit case.
But has he filed anything through his office with the court in this matter?
Not in this matter.
Okay. The California Constitution was adopted initially in 1847?
I believe you're correct, Your Honor.
And at that time, there was an effort to put a Second Amendment into the Constitution?
I don't know the answer to that question.
And it failed?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Then the Constitution was readopted in the 1870s and no provision was put in?
Your Honor, my understanding is that the California Constitution is based very much in part upon the state of Iowa's Constitution, which also does not contain a right to keep and bear arms provision. California is one of only five states that does not have a...
And it's the only state in this circuit that doesn't have a Second Amendment, correct?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
There's kind of two ways of looking at that, isn't it?
Well, one way of looking at it, Your Honor, is that the 14th Amendment was specifically created in order to avoid this kind of apartheid of civil rights, that there's a minimum level of traditional fundamental rights that have to be recognized as part of your citizenship of the United States.
It could also mean that the people of California have... indicated the preference not to have a Second Amendment, correct?
I suppose it could mean that, Your Honor, if there was a record about that or if there was a statement about that.
But, counsel, all of that is pre-Heller, of course, in which the Supreme Court of the United States identified the Second Amendment right as a personal right, not a collective one. And the question before us, I guess, is to what extent... is this incorporated as a fundamental right? So what happened before Heller probably has no bearing so far as any intention of the state of California is concerned. Is that correct?
Well, what happened before Heller, and also, Your Honor, what happened before the ratification of the 14th Amendment? Point is that the 14th Amendment was specifically created with the policy in mind that United States citizenship and the rights attendant with that would apply to all people in all regions and in all jurisdictions. And through the history of constitutional law from the ratification of the 14th Amendment till now, various fundamental rights, the First Amendment, the criminal procedure rights, and the other parts of the Bill of Rights.
So when California Attorney General Brown says that the Supreme Court of the United States should extend to all states Heller's core Second Amendment holding that the government cannot deny citizens the right to possess handguns in their homes, that presumably is a recognition that Heller changes the ballgame.
I believe it would be. That would be our position as well, Your Honor.
Suppose.
Can I ask you this question?
Excuse me. What is the agenda here? What are we looking at if your side prevails? Is that going to limit the control of firearms in the state of California? Is it going to restrict the control of firearms in the state of California? I mean, where is this all going to take us?
Your Honor, I believe that the Supreme Court spoke to that in the Heller.
I'm asking you.
You're asking
where is this going to take us?
You're asking me my agenda, my litigation agenda, Your Honor?
No, I'm asking you where... If we agree, if six judges agree with your position, where will that take us?
I believe
what is it going to end up at?
Well, Your Honor, one of the things...
Will there be more guns in California or fewer guns in California? Will there be more regulation or will there be less regulation?
Well, Your Honor, I think regulations as the Heller Court.
Can't you answer my question? I mean, I've been thinking about this. Where's this all going to, where's this taking us to?
There might be no change at all.
Because what is the hidden agenda here?
There might be no change at all with regard to gun ownership in California.
But what is the hidden agenda here?
I don't know that there is a hidden agenda, Your Honor. Our stated agenda is to try and have the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms applicable to all citizens of the country, most especially in California, where that right doesn't exist under the state constitution.
Let's assume that the Supreme Court last week had overruled Cruikshank and its progeny and said that the Second Amendment applies to the states through the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. And in effect absorbs the Heller interpretation of the Second Amendment and applies it to all the states. How can you argue for a reversal for your client in this case?
On two bases, Your Honor. One is that the right recognized.
Your client wants to have gun shows on public property. Is that his basic aim?
We want to be able to conduct gun shows at the county fairgrounds on a level playing field with other events that take place.
Even if Heller were fully absorbed and embraced and applied to all the states, it wouldn't argue for a reversal of this case, would it?
I think it would, Your Honor.
What's that?
Because I think that the right to keep and bear arms and the right specifically recognized in the Heller decision on the Heller facts was a right to have a gun in the home for self-protection.
Didn't Heller explicitly carve out exceptions for restrictions on public property and commercial sales and that sort of thing?
It said that long-standing regulations regarding firearms in sensitive places are presumptively valid, but it also went on to say that we're not deciding those issues today. Problem in this case, Your Honors, the county has done nothing to define or put forth any evidence that their fairgrounds are a sensitive place.
Well, maybe the thing to do would be, assuming that we would agree that there is a fundamental right and it does apply to the states, to have this case remanded to the trial court for the development of evidence to determine whether or not a use of guns on county property or at least fairgrounds would be within that area that was identified in the Supreme Court's opinion. Would additional evidence make a difference?
I don't believe it'll help my case because I don't believe there is any evidence that the fairgrounds are a sensitive place. So that would be a question that perhaps the county would want to take up in a trial court level. The problem is sensitive places, I think as envisioned by Heller, were those places like airport sterile areas or courtrooms where there's a metal detector at the front door and where the government assumes some responsibility.
Let me see if I can flip the question on you. What's so special about the fairgrounds? Why can't you have a gun show in a stadium or a old outdoor movie theater or parking lot to a shopping mall? I don't know about Northern California, but in Southern California where swap meets and the like in such location. I assume this is not uncommon here either, right? Why couldn't your clients... I'm sorry. Not why. Could, if your clients are precluded from using the fairgrounds, would there be other locations in Alameda County where they could hold a gun show?
There might be.
Let me make it even more specific.
All right.
Is there anything about this ordinance that we're considering, that would preclude them from holding a gun show at some other location in Alameda County?
I presume the court's asking me, is there a private venue or perhaps non-government property where my clients...
Yeah, you know, when you start talking about private venues, you know, it's a little bit difficult to define because, you know, shopping center parking lots have been held, at least in California, and both on state law and federal law, I guess, to be quasi-public, even though they are private property. I don't want to get hung up on the private-public distinction. I'm just asking, let's put the fairgrounds off limits for whatever reason. Is there some thing in this ordinance that would keep your clients from having their show at some other public location, public meaning where the access, you know, where the public could come freely?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that there's another venue owned by the county where we could hold a gun show. Gun shows do typically take
that
place.
That wasn't the question.
I don't mean owned by the county. Let me just make it very specific. If this were part of Los Angeles where I live, you know, a few miles from my house, there is a big old parking lot that used to, I think, be an old outdoor movie theater. And every Saturday and Sunday they have a swap meet there. I don't know anything about the law down there on these issues, but why is there something that would prevent your clients from finding a location like that, something privately owned, something quasi-public, where they could hold a gun show if the fairgrounds were off limits?
Not in this ordinance, but under state law, Your Honor. The state of California regulates gun shows very strictly under the Gun Show Enforcement Act of 2000. And part of the requirement is that the gun show promoter be able to control the crowd by having only one entrance and exit to the place so that guns can be checked on the way in to make sure that they're safety tied and unloaded and that the person possessing the gun has a valid government ID. So
the fairgrounds only has one entrance?
Well, the building that is used, there are several, obviously there's several doors that for emergency exit, but there's only one door that people can come in and go out of at the gun show.
Well, could they hold it in the Cow Palace?
Gun shows,
the Cow Palace. It was once a big convention here.
Gun shows do take place at the Cow Palace for now, Your Honor, but I believe that the state legislature is trying.
Different county, right? The Cow Palace is not.
I believe it's San Francisco County, Your Honor, yes.
Right. There must be something like that in Alameda.
I don't believe there is, Your Honor. There may be a private venue that we could go to.
Now, does this matter? Does it make a difference in your view if they have alternative locations that they can use?
No, I don't think it does, Your Honor. This was sort of taken up on a different issue in the Heller decision when the District of Columbia tried to state that they could ban handguns because rifles and shotguns were available. And the Heller court said that was an impermissible restriction. Now, here, saying that there are other venues available, my clients do, in fact, hold gun shows at other fairgrounds. Fairgrounds in Santa Clara County, they've held gun shows at fairgrounds in Solano County. The fairgrounds, as a class of property, are just not sensitive places. They never have been.
Mr. Kilmer, I have a very different question, following up on Judge Hawkins' reference to Cruikshank. As I read what the Supreme Court said in the 1800s, the Second Amendment binds and restricts only the federal government. Since then, the court's selective incorporation jurisprudence has certainly evolved. Obviously, a number of judges believe that Cruikshank continues to control, that is, the Second and Seventh Circuit, and others believe it doesn't, that is, the three-judge panel and our court. It strikes me that this might make this case a worthwhile candidate for certifying the question of incorporation to the U.S. Supreme Court. Do you have a view on that? And I would appreciate it if counsel on the other side would remember to answer that question as well.
Yes, Your Honor. I would not presume to instruct the court on the issue of certification. It's somewhat of a controversial issue. But I think footnote 23 of the Heller decision, when it describes the necessity of conducting the required analysis, I think the word required is a commandment to the lower courts to do the analysis. And then, as the cases percolate up through the system, the Supreme Court may address it. But it certainly is wouldn't be the time in this case that a question of law was certified to another court.
Well, there is a certiorari petition pending, isn't there, on the Seventh Circuit opinion?
I believe that there's a certiorari petition pending on the two Seventh Circuit cases, Your Honor, and one Second Circuit case.
Do you know whether that's on the calendar for the beginning of the term?
My understanding is that they are set for conference on the 29th, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. And that might well answer that question.
Correct.
There would be no need for us to decide this case if the Supreme Court takes certiorari with it?
We would certainly
We could await the Supreme Court's decision and have an answer to the basic question.
Yes, Your Honor. A corporation for my clients is a means to an end. For 10 years, we have been forbidden from holding gun shows at the fairgrounds. I would like to get my clients back into the fairgrounds and back in business and people exercising their right to acquire guns at those gun shows as soon as possible. But it certainly is not beyond reason to hold the decision here and to see what the Supreme Court does on those other two cases.
Would the fear of liability be a reason, a sufficient reason, the county might have for prohibiting gun shows? I say, you know, guns are dangerous things. People can grab them, load them in a jiffy, and do something terrible. And, you know, we choose not to incur the risk that something like that will happen with all the financial and political fallout that that would create.
Congress passed in recently the Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, and that act was recently upheld as constitutional by this circuit recently. The county is a protected party under that statute. Just because they are in the stream of commerce by allowing gun shows to take place, they are not automatically liable for the criminal misuse of firearms. So
it's the word automatically that...
I'm sorry?
The key word there is automatically. They're not automatically liable, but a good lawyer can litigate a reason. Are automatically not liable?
Well, good lawyers can always
Answer my last question. Are they automatically not liable? Do they have immunity from liability?
Under the Lawful Commerce and Firearms Act, they do have immunity, Your Honor.
Counsel, the district court indicated that since 2005, I gather till the date of the district court's ruling, that there had been 22 gun shows conducted by your client. Were any of those conducted in Alameda County?
None.
None. Okay, so from your perspective, you're just blocked.
We're
in
blocked.
Alameda County.
We're blocked in Alameda County. We're blocked in San Mateo County because San Mateo enacted an identical ordinance. We're blocked in Santa Cruz, the city of Santa Cruz. We're blocked in Marin County. These are all places where we had historically held gun shows. And Alameda's initial early wins on this case have emboldened other counties to try and exclude gun shows from the fairgrounds. I would like to...
And none of that is voluntary. If they really wanted to hold a gun show in Alameda County, they couldn't find a place to do it.
My client's business model, Your Honor, is to use county fairgrounds as traditional public fora to hold their gun shows.
Yeah, you know, people change business rules in light of changed conditions. To stick with an outmoded business model is to sink and lose your business. Why, if one venue is not available, why would you go for 10 years without finding another location? Is it really impossible to find someplace in all of Alameda County to hold? I mean, what you need is a big parking lot or a big building that you can, where the doors are capable of being locked, so that you can have entrance and exit to one location. And what's so difficult about that?
Well, Your Honor, that brings me to the other reason why the case is before the court, and that is, since we're talking about traditional public fora, it is it's not permissible for the government to simply exclude people from public property engaged in expressive conduct and expressive speech activities because they disagree with their message.
You can speak all you want. You just can't bring any guns in. You don't need guns to speak. You can use your mouth.
We need guns to hold a gun show, Your Honor, though. And the county has taken this obtuse position from the day one of the case that gun shows can take place. You just can't have gun shows.
I hear you is making a First Amendment argument. And there's nothing about the ordinance that prevents you from speaking. You can talk about guns. You can have signs about guns. Guns in locked cases, displaying them like a museum. You could do all that. The only thing you can do is have them available for people to touch and feel, and you know, engage in the kind of activities they normally engage in when they're shopping, which is perfectly understandable. If you're going to buy a gun, you want to be able to, you know, pick it up and examine it.
And this is where the equal protection analysis comes in, Your Honor, because the Scottish Games have been permitted to hold an event very similar to a gun show. They have guns on display during their historical reenactments. They load them with blank ammunition. They fire them at each other. This is not unlike a gun show where people go to observe guns as historical artifacts, as objects of art.
But you're engaged in commercial activity, are you not? Isn't that significantly different from holding some kind of a public performance where the weapons are essentially being used for entertainment purposes?
Well, I think that the gun shows are a hybrid event, Your Honor. The guns are there for entertainment, for instruction, for admiration as objects of art, and they are also there for sale. So I think it's a mixed event. It's not purely just historical reenactment or purely a museum display.
But these are gun sales for profit, are they not?
Of course.
Yeah. So why shouldn't the commercial aspect be weighed more heavily than objects of beatification?
Well, for one thing, Your Honor, the county has never challenged our right to sell guns. They're not challenging that at all. In fact, they've admitted that we comply with all laws with regard to commercial sales. That is both federal and state law. The issue of whether the guns are there for commercial purposes or whether they're there for pure First Amendment speech is really not even before the court.
Then why is this no different from simply regulating the location where certain commercial activities can be held? We do it all the time with regard to exotic dancers and adult bookstores.
And on that point, Your Honor, there are three cases that have been decided since the original Nordyk decision came out, but I think the court should take a look at. There was a case from the New York Supreme Court that we cited in a 28J letter. There was the recent Annex Books case out of the Seventh Circuit, and then there is the Berger versus City of Seattle case just recently decided by an en banc panel of this case.
I'd like to focus more specifically on the fairgrounds question. Could the public operator of a fairgrounds decide that because of the family nature of the events that are held there, every activity had to be available that was permissible for children? No alcoholic beverages, no gun shows, nothing that a 10-year-old couldn't do. Could they do that?
Well, the Gun Show Enforcement Act of 2000, the state law, speaks to that issue, Your Honor. Minors are not permitted at gun shows.
I know that. That's my point exactly. Could a public entity say that the things that happen at our fairgrounds must be available? Only things that are available to children may happen at our fairgrounds. Therefore, no gun shows, no sales of alcohol, no nude dancing, nothing that is unavailable to minors can happen because we want everything to be completely family-friendly. Would that be permissible in your view? And if not, why not?
No, Your Honor, because under the First Amendment analysis, we don't protect the rights under the First Amendment based on a least common denominator that children should somehow restrict access to material, guns, the enjoyment of guns, or adult material are not limited by children. It's time, place, and manner restrictions are obviously permissible.
So why wouldn't that be a time, place, and manner restriction if the decision was that the fair should be a family affair?
Because it's overbroad, Your Honor. And if we
overbroad because fairs can't be family-centered entirely, or why?
No, Your Honor, if in rereading the Berger case and going through the list that the en banc court did there as to how closely we take a look at the evil to be avoided and the regulation in place, I believe that this ordinance would fail.
Counsel, I'd be interested in your view of the current viability of Cruikshank, Miller, and Presser. I get the impression from your briefs that you think they're moribund. Clearly, the Privileges and Immunities Clause had gone down in, I think, 1873 with the slaughterhouses, and I think Cruikshank was 2 years later, so this court would clearly have had in mind the fact that the Privileges and Immunities Clause had a limited, if any, application. Given that fact, and given the fact that it wasn't until, I think, 1925 with Gritlar, whatever, you had the first sort of incorporation, and then later on with the Jonesboro boys, what's the basis of those cases? Is it your position that even though the Supreme Court has not revealed them and overturned them, and indeed specifically said they were still viable in Heller, if it's viable, on what basis is it viable? On what pillar does it stand from your perspective?
Well, incorporation is possible under one of three theories, either direct. Barron v. Baltimore says no to that, although Barron v. Baltimore is kind of becoming a speed bump. Of course, the Privileges and Immunities Clause has a complex, somewhat arcane application, and that is where I believe Presser, Cruikshank, and Miller gets their authority. And, of course, the due process.
Help me with this. How can that be if the court just decided the Slaughterhouse cases 2 years earlier than Cruikshank, said it basically is a dead letter, how could the authority for Cruikshank and its progeny be the Privileges and Immunities Clause?
Well, I think that the result in Cruikshank and Presser was that the Privileges and Immunities was not a way to incorporate the Second Amendment. So the modern doctrine of selective due process incorporation.
Well, it hadn't come up yet, right?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't available.
Given that fact, where are they? Just out there in the ether from your perspective, or are we still bound by them?
Well, I think you're still bound by Slaughterhouse, and you're bound by for instance, Cruikshank or Presser, if the only available theory is Privileges and Immunities, but it's not the only theory available.
But from your perspective, in order for us to, in quotes, get around those, you have to go to a new incorporation theory that they never considered, and that's okay from your perspective. We can do it even though the Supreme Court, under its law, says we're the only ones who can overturn our own cases.
Yes, because the Supreme Court, again, that the footnote 23 in Heller being almost an engraved invitation said the required analysis under due process and Duncan versus Louisiana and the line of cases there is a required analysis. I see I only have 2 minutes and 32 seconds left, so I'd like to reserve that.
Okay. We'll hear from the other side.
Good morning, Your Honor. Sarah Weaver appearing on behalf of the County of Alameda. I want to start out with the question of incorporation. The Supreme Court has made very clear in the Shearson American Express case that the court reserves to itself the right to overrule its own precedents. And the court has said that if a rationale on which the case is based seems to have been eroded or undermined by our later cases, we still reserve to ourselves the right to overrule our own cases.
What would they have to overrule here?
They would have to overrule the holding in Presser. Presser held specifically that the Second Amendment right constrains only the federal government. And in Presser, there were several challenges. One was to the entire military code. One was to under the Second Amendment. One was to the ex post facto and bill of attainder clauses. And then one was under the 14th Amendment. And the court first examined the 14th Amendment challenge under the Privileges and Immunities Clause. And then the court said at page 268, the argument of plaintiff in error that the legislation mentioned deprives him of either life, liberty, or due process of law, or that it is a bill of attainder or ex post facto law, is so clearly untenable as to require no discussion.
Now, 1886, right, Professor?
Yes.
And the selective incorporation doctrine, the first case finding selective incorporation under the due process clause, is what date?
In 1929. Okay. And
so
the first.
How could one have to overrule Presser in order to adopt a theory that wasn't in existence for another quarter of a century or more, and that the court doesn't mention and couldn't, best we could tell, possibly had in mind. Why couldn't one leave PRESA in place and say, under the theories then available, PRESA continues to be good law, privileges, immunities, whatever other theories are available, but under this additional theory, the due process clause of the 14th Amendment, that's another way of incorporating. Where's the overruling happening?
The overruling comes in the holding. The direct holding of the Presser case is that the Second Amendment right only constrains Congress, only the federal government, not the states and local governments. Whatever theory you use to try to get around that holding, you would still be overruling the holding of the case, because you would find that the Second Amendment right does constrain the state and local governments.
So under your theory, Ms. Weaver, nothing would constrain the legislature of the state of California from prohibiting the possession of firearms in the homes by residents of this state?
You mean because there's not a state constitutional
right to bear arms? There's no state constitution, and you just told us that the Second Amendment of the federal constitution constrains only the United States Congress. The logical extension of your argument must be that if California wishes to prohibit the possession of firearms in the homes of its residents, there's no constitutional restriction, either federal or state, to prevent the legislature from doing that.
Unless and until the federal court, the Supreme Court overrules Presser, that's correct, unless the courts look at the right of self-defense at common law under state law and determine that that right would preclude that type of regulation.
Let's say there were a constitutional amendment that specifically applied the Second Amendment, or a right like the Second Amendment, to the states. And the case came before us under this new amendment to the Constitution, would we be constrained by Presser and say, well, we can't accord you this right because Presser says it doesn't apply to the states?
No, but I think a constitutional amendment is different.
The Supreme Court said it doesn't apply to the states.
Because that's an intervening legislative act. That's different than whether or not a court can overrule a holding. I'd also like to just point out...
Why isn't the subsequent discovery of another clause in the existing constitutional text stand on the same footing? Supreme Court looks at other language in the Constitution and finds, all right, that it did not consider 1886, and why isn't that like an amendment to the Constitution?
Well, the Supreme Court holds that if the reasons that are underlying its prior holdings seem to have been eroded. And it seems to me that a new doctrine
That's certainly right if you're dealing with the same constitutional provision and a new argument comes along, a new doctrine. But here we're talking about different constitutional texts, another portion. It's really as if the Constitution had been amended and a new clause was added.
The Presser case considered the same clause that is at issue here. The Presser case considered the challenge under the Due Process Clause. Now, the modern selective incorporation doctrine for interpreting that clause had not yet been developed, I agree. But that is a different reasoning, a different rationale for interpreting the clause. But the clause was there. The clause was before the court. The court looked at the clause, and the court rejected the argument that the right constrained the state and local governments based on the challenge under that clause.
I gather that you adopt the argument that Judge Easterbrook did in the Chicago case when he said, if a court of appeals could disregard a decision of the Supreme Court by identifying and accepting one or another contention not expressly addressed by the justices, the court's decisions could be circumvented with ease. they would bind only judges too dim-witted to come up with a novel argument.
Yes.
Is that basically what you're saying?
I do agree with that, and I just want to also point out that after the Duncan case was decided, in Burton versus Sills, almost a year after the Duncan case was decided, the court had the opportunity to apply the modern selective incorporation doctrine to a challenge to the New Jersey state dealer licensing scheme. And after the New Jersey Supreme Court upheld that law and it was appealed to the Supreme Court dismissed the appeal for want of a substantial federal question. So all the indications are that the court still sees the Presser case as good law, as a holding.
Counsel, I have a question about your status here. You are representing the County of Alameda, which is a constituent part of the state of California.
It's a political subdivision.
Political subdivision of the state of California, which has, through the Attorney General of your state, filed an amicus brief in the Supreme Court of the United States with respect to this very case that Judge Smith had been asking you about. And specifically, Attorney General Brown says that the Supreme Court of the United States should extend to the states Heller's core Second Amendment holding that the government cannot deny citizens the right to possess handguns in their homes. Are you in conflict? In other words, do you disagree with your own state's attorney general?
Yes, I do. The county does. The county.
I won't tell him when I see him.
He might find out somehow.
It's all in confidence here.
I don't think he cares.
That could be right.
Hasn't the state of California, by law, given counties the authority to do this?
Yes, exactly. Under the California Government Code, the county is charged with the duty and the privilege of regulating its own property as the interests of its inhabitants require, and that's the authority for the county making decisions about how its own property is operated.
I don't understand that your answer to my prior question. How can you square the holding in Heller, which prohibited the District of Columbia by ordinance of the district from banning firearms in the home, not to extend to the states to do the same thing?
Well, the Heller case recognizes the right of self-defense as being a fundamental right. That is a right that's governed by common law doctrines and common law protections. The Heller court did not say that the right to possess a firearm is a fundamental right.
I'm reading Justice Scalia's opinion at page 28, 21, and 22 of 128 Supreme Court. In sum, we hold that the district's ban on handgun possession in the home violates the Second Amendment, as does its prohibition against rendering any lawful firearm in the home operable for the purpose of immediate self-defense.
Yes.
I don't understand how you can take the position in the face of that language that the county, as an instrumentality of the state, could enact by ordinance a law that prohibits Alameda County residents from keeping firearms in their homes.
Well, the Second Amendment has not been held applicable to the states and the local governments. So if it hasn't been incorporated, if the right hasn't been incorporated against the states and local governments, then the states and local governments do still have the authority to regulate if, under the common law doctrines in the state, it's not otherwise precluded.
Well, this ordinance doesn't do that.
It doesn't. It doesn't regulate residential property. None of the county-owned property that's subject to the ordinance is residential. It's undisputed that the county can't regulate residential property because of the existence of the Alameda Housing Authority. So by law, several statutes preclude the county from owning or operating residential property. Also, the challenged activity here, possession of firearms on the fairgrounds for the purpose of a gun show, the appellants have made clear they don't wish to possess the guns in this context for the purpose of self-defense. So that aspect of the Heller ruling isn't implicated either. This is much closer to the sensitive places part of the decision than anywhere near the core right that the court was carving out in the Heller case. And in that regard, I wanted to
About whether Cruikshank is still alive. What is your position on whether it would not be prudent for an immediate certification of the incorporation question to the Supreme Court?
Well, I think that that's a good option. I also it seems to the county that the case law, the Shearson case, and the and Justice Ginsburg's comment in Agostini about the clear instruction of the court.
Well, that's what creates the conundrum.
Well,
I mean, because the Supreme Court is the only forum that
can overrule the holding
authoritatively say whether Cruikshank is still alive or not.
Well, there in this case, there's also a second constitutional doctrine that the court could rely on to reach the question. And it's what the panel did here was look at the narrow question of whether the ordinance regulates a sensitive place within the meaning of the of the Heller case.
That leads to my question, which is, as interesting as it is to all of us, why do we even have to decide this question? Why couldn't we assume without deciding that the Second Amendment is incorporated and reach exactly the same result that has already been reached and leave it to the Supreme Court and the other cases to decide whatever it's going to decide? It actually doesn't seem to matter to the outcome here.
That alternative would certainly be consistent with the doctrine of avoiding unnecessary constitutional adjudication of broad issues when you can decide a narrow issue. You could assume without deciding incorporation, then you can look at the record and determine whether or not the fairgrounds and the law,
it's not quite so simple. I mean, we're here on a denial of a motion to amend. And normally what you do is you say, well, if we think that district court should have allowed amendment, you'd send back for factual development. There are all sorts of facts in this case that would be useful to know before deciding whether or not this hypothetical right, if it exists, is infringed.
I thought this was a summary judgment. Isn't this a summary judgment?
The issue on whether or not the appellants are also appealing from the denial of a motion for leave to amend to add a Second Amendment claim. That's where the Second Amendment claim.
It's not summary judgment. We're sort of adjudicating this in theory. If there is a Second Amendment right applicable to the states, the prudent thing would be to send it back, let them amend their complaint, come up with some facts, maybe have a summary judgment motion, maybe have a trial. It's not one of those things sort of capable of being decided in the abstract, is it?
Well, but the trial court order can be affirmed on any ground that is shown in the record, and the trial court certainly, if it...
How do we know what's shown in the record when they have been denied leave to amend? I don't know what they'd say if they were allowed leave to amend, what allegations they would make. We'd have to hypothesize what things they would... Do we have the amended complaint?
Well, yes. They provided a proposed second amended complaint. And in the second amended complaint and in the third amended complaint, they specifically state that the reason for possessing guns at gun shows is not for the purpose of self-defense or for use of the gun as a weapon. And in addition to that, there would be no reason to send it back to the trial court if it would be futile, if the facts about the fairgrounds are already fleshed out by this record, then why send it back to the trial court to come to the same conclusion? Counsel for the Nordykes has said there would be no reason to send it back to the trial court. And the facts on the face of the ordinance take us substantially a long way for a determination as to whether or not the fairgrounds is a sensitive place within the meaning of the Heller presumptively valid categories.
But, counsel, you're suggesting then, if we were to assume without deciding, then we could get to the ultimate question as to whether this particular location is a sensitive area or not. And suppose this is a group of 11 judges. Suppose we were to conclude that, well, maybe it is not a sensitive area, in which case, assuming that the Second Amendment applies to the state, then we would have to declare the ordinance unconstitutional. Would you be willing to accept that result?
The county would be willing to take that risk because I think that this record substantially supports the sensitivity of the venue. And we have the Heffron case to look at in terms of guidance.
What's so sensitive about it? It's sort of a big place, right? What you know, there's no court being held there. There's no captive audience. You don't have. It's not like a hospital where you have sensitive life-giving equipment. What's particularly sensitive about this sort of big arena where you hold? I mean, I assume it's a big convention center, right?
No. The fairgrounds, it's big open grounds, and then there are.
Even better, it's a big field where cows could be.
No, and then there are various buildings in various places. First of all, the buildings in which the gun shows take place are government-owned buildings. The Heller court said so government buildings.
Your position is that everything that's owned by the government is sensitive?
Every
national forest, every square.
Well, I think
of Yosemite, you know, of every national park, every national forest, every beach, you know, everything that's owned by the state, federal, or local government is per se sensitive?
No, I think it has to be decided in the context. But if you look at the two things the court called out, government buildings and schools, one of the things that we know is that each of those locations, people are invitees to the location. For schools, there are children. Very often in government buildings, there are children. There are people who are strangers to each other. There's a low expectation of privacy. There are large crowds gathered, and the Heffron case teaches that crowd control is a legitimate public safety concern for government. It's government-owned property, so government is charged with the responsibility for safeguarding its invitees. You asked a question about liability. The incident on the fairgrounds involving the shootout resulted in 11 liability lawsuits against the county. So there are legitimate concerns when you have a venue where it's difficult to provide public safety with ease, to ensure the safety of the invitees. And there are other cases in which the Supreme Court has recognized that the government, just like any private property owner, has a right to try to protect its property and make sure it's...
That rationale would apply to any big building where you hold a convention. It would apply to the Cow Palace. It would apply to what's that stadium near the airport in Oakland?
The Coliseum.
Yes. What it's called. Anyway, I see it every time I go to the airport. I assume that I don't know whether that's owned by the city or not, but let's assume it's not owned by the city. That's a place where a cow can gather. It seems to me that any place you could have a gun show would be a place where cow could gather. That's sort of the way things are.
So wouldn't
that cover government property, non-government property, any kind of car situation?
Well, if we were speaking about private property, the private property owner would have the choice to make a decision not to undertake the risk posed to its invitees by having that activity there. That's the same decision that the county is making here.
Let's say the county were to extend the ordinance and say, okay, we've covered public fairgrounds. We now apply the same prohibition to any place that can accommodate more than 100 people at the same time. Same rationale, right? It would be a sensitive place.
Well, the here the government is acting as a property owner, and when the court referred to government buildings, it was talking about property that the government owns, where people come to engage in activities that the government has made available to them. And that seems to me...
As I understand, the same rationale could be applied. Everything you say about the government building could be applied to any building where a bunch of people meet.
Well,
so all those things, it's not a very...
Well, those
it's not
are,
a limiting rationale in any
well,
meaningful way.
In addition to all of those things, which the Heffron Court also considered significant in terms of making decisions about how the government can control that property, in addition to all those things, the county actually had a shooting incident on this fairgrounds. It had 11 liability lawsuits. It had 8 people injured by gunshot wounds, some of them children, 4 of them children. So by experience, the fairgrounds is treated here by this in this ordinance as a sensitive place.
I remember that in San Francisco there were shooting incidents in office buildings within the last 10 years, right?
Were those shootings, did they occur in the area where gun shows were held, or
the gun show was not taking place at the fairgrounds at the time of the shooting? There has never been a shooting in the context of the gun shows. When the gun shows take place, and the record shows this, there are other activities going on the fairgrounds as well.
Well, are people searched for weapons when they come into the fairgrounds?
The county installed metal detectors after the shooting incident, but California law allows persons to carry weapons openly on their person, so that the only thing that the metal detectors screen for is illegal concealed weapons. If the person...
Let me ask you a question. Does your organization have a problem with individuals possessing weapons for their protection?
The county? No.
You, your organization.
My client, the county?
Oh, you represent the county. Does the county have a problem with that?
The county doesn't have a problem with the possession of weapons for self-defense. And the ordinance is not a strict liability crime. If somebody had to raise the defense of self-defense or justification because they had to use a firearm in self-defense, the county would have no problem with that.
Ms. Weaver, can you help me? There's language in the Heller opinion that talks about regulating schools and government buildings. If the Second Amendment doesn't apply to the states, how would one regulate guns in the schools if only Congress is constricted? The Supreme Court told us in the Lopez decision that Congress had no power under the Commerce Clause to forbid guns in schools. So how can you square that language in the Heller decision with your position that that they weren't referring to application of the Second Amendment to the state?
Well, the federal government actually does regulate possession of firearms within 1,000 feet of schools under the Commerce Clause after the Lopez case found infirmity in that particular statute. Congress revisited the statute and amended it to reference guns that have moved in commerce. And so they do regulate guns within 1,000 feet of schools. So that just reminds me of one other point that I wanted to make. The Protection of Lawful Commerce and Firearms Act applies only to licensees. The county is not a federal firearms licensee. It is not entitled to any of the protections of that act, so that the liability issue would still be a problem for the county. There are, in addition to the findings in the ordinance, there's a declaration in the record from Sergeant Knudsen, who responded to the scene of the shooting, a declaration from the county risk manager related to the liability claims against the county, a county health report related to the impact of firearms in Alameda County. And then in the statement of undisputed facts, there are the facts related to the thousands of weapons that are on the fairgrounds, when so is taking place, the fact that in the operative complaint, the appellants have said guns at gun shows are not weapons, they are not being used to protect life or property, which indicates that they're not implicating the self-defense right that the Heller case was referencing. And there's also evidence in the record regarding the numbers of attendance and the other activities that take place at the same time that the gun shows are taking place on the fairgrounds. The other issue that one of the judges asked about was alternate venues. The Oakland Convention Center is a large venue where the doors are controlled, and the county doesn't own Oakland Convention Center. The ordinance only regulates county-owned property and not buildings where the state regulates gun possession.
Who owns the Oakland Convention Center?
I'm not sure, but it's not owned by the county, that I'm sure of.
But is it owned by the city?
It probably is owned by the city. I'm not sure.
If I understood what the council for the Noronha said, is it's their business practice is to work out of fairgrounds, though. Are you suggesting that they would have to pick another venue and that that's since it's an alternate venue, that's sufficient? Don't they have the right to pick where they want to have their shows as long as they comply with the law?
Yes, and if they complied with the exception in the ordinance, they could also have their gun show on the property within the terms of the ordinance, as the Scottish Games conduct their activity within the terms of the exception. They don't want to do that. They don't feel it's possible because they want to be able to have people exchange guns and look at handguns back and forth.
Well, they're just saying that if somebody wants to go have breakfast, you're saying, well, you can look at the breakfast through a glass window, but you can't eat it.
Well, many of the vendors keep the guns secured to the tables with wires, so they actually can still be picked up, but they're still secured to the tables. So that seems to me.
They are correct, are they not, that if the ordinance is valid and enforced, they cannot conduct a gun show as understood by people in the gun show business?
They could not conduct all of the activities, the handing back and forth and so forth, that they have described as taking place at their gun show. But
that's an essential part of that, is it not?
That's what they view, but the county isn't in the business of making sure that they can have exactly what kind of gun show they want on the county's own property. Also, the record also reflects that at the time the ordinance was adopted, there were many other licensed dealers, many other venues where you could purchase firearms in Alameda County and in nearby Contra Costa County, and in addition, many other gun shows. There's a listing of other gun shows for the years 2000 to 2005, or I'm not sure I have the years right, in the record.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The state of California disagrees with the county with regard to sensitive places and government buildings. Penal Code Section 171B, which was part of the penal code that was actually amended in the Comprehensive Gun Show Enforcement Act of 2000, specifically exempts government buildings where gun shows take place by the rules set forth in the Gun Show Enforcement Act. Every gun that comes to a gun show must, when it is brought onto the property, must be secured with a tie wrap so that it cannot be functioned until or unless it's actually being looked at by the potential buyer or somebody who's examining the gun to see how it works or some other such thing. So guns at gun shows are secured. And when this case started, we sent a letter to County Council asking them, do we fit in your exception? They either did not respond or they sent a letter to the fairgrounds manager saying, gun shows without guns are okay, but not the way the Nordykes want to run their gun show previously. So the state of California, in trying to regulate gun shows, has found that fairgrounds are not sensitive places. And how could the county even argue a sensitive places doctrine at this point in time? That concept was created by Heller, which was decided almost 10 years after this case started. There are two reasons to try and reach the incorporation issue, even if the court were to make the same findings that the lower panel did. One is a pure Second Amendment argument, and we believe that the ordinance does violate the Second Amendment. And the other is the equal protection argument. The county has engaged in this practice of allowing the Scottish Games to possess their firearms. Now, unfortunately, the Heller court did not give us a level of scrutiny to apply, but obviously rational basis is off the test. So at a minimum, intermediate scrutiny is available. And what the courts have been...
What do we know about the Scottish Games?
We know that the Scottish Games engage in mock battles where they load their firearms with blanks and shoot them at each other in order to reenact...
But the participants are limited, right? It's not just anybody who buys a ticket gets a gun. You have to be a pre-participant in play a role, dress up, wear kilt, you know, the whole thing.
Well, there's this vague reference in
the court. That cuts out a lot of people.
There's this vague reference to authorized participant that's not defined, Your Honor. But we would contend that people who buy a ticket are authorized participants in gun shows.
So what's your problem then? If that's the case, you could hold a gun show.
Except that when we asked the county to interpret the ordinance so that we could remain in compliance and conduct the gun shows and invite people, that we wouldn't be in violation of this demeanor ordinance.
So why don't you go to the Superior Court and get a ruling that they are misinterpreting the ordinance? That if you buy a ticket, you're a participant, you get to hold a gun, that would solve your problem.
We're hoping for
solve
that.
Solve our problem, too.
We're hoping for that ruling from you, Your Honor. Thank you. I see that my time has expired.
Thank you. Case is argued. Stand submitted.